entertainment.ie.
I love the way you say film.
Hello, you're welcome to the film show. I'm Mike Sheridan. I'm joined as always by Brian Lloyd and Dima Lumbi. Brian is rocking one of my Under Armour hoodies.
It's because I'm wearing a green shirt. And
you're ruining the illusion. This is real. What are you talking about?
Oh,
this
we're totally filming in this brown basement. With the dank lights.
What's up with dank? We were all about the dank last week as well, and the dank memes and all that stuff.
Oh, but the dank! Yeah.
You had a big week, Brian. There's a lot of stuff we want to get to this week. We're going to review Mission Impossible. We've got a surprise clip from an awesome, I suppose, you know, what do you want, like cult hero, do we want to say? Like, I mean, he's our hero.
He's our hero.
He's certainly our hero.
I think we should have, this show should now be a call-in show, because technically... He called into the show.
He did call into the show. So we're going to get to that. We're going to revisit The Way of the Gun. I know he spoke to Chris McQuarrie, who directed Way of the Gun as his first movie, directed the latest Mission Impossible, that we're also going to talk about. So it's a nice little package this week. Right. Deirdre was asking me off camera there, Mike, what way are we doing things? What's the structure? Because she craves
the
structure.
Organized. And I like structure.
And I was like, well, I've never given you structure before.
Why are you going to change
it? And it's been fine, right?
Yeah. Structure makes the fun organized.
One thing that you did say you wanted to talk about this week, Deirdre, was Brian and the hug again.
Yes.
So Brian,
not just me.
No, not just you. To be fair, Brian, the world has been talking about this hug. You went somewhat viral. Do fill in the watchers and the listeners.
Okay, so basically, right, so... the interview that was done last week with Paul Rudd, a segment from it went viral on Twitter. I think it's at something like 400,000 views. It's at the moment where I asked Paul Rudd about this tweet that was doing the rounds, essentially where the reason why Ant-Man wasn't in Infinity War was because he could shrink down and then go up into Thanos's ass and then explode out.
Why not his nostril? Why did they have to go with ass?
I don't know. I mean,
why did they have to go with some more orifice? Why did it have to be?
Yeah.
I mean, I get comedy. I get it. Comedy.
Yeah,
right.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that was it. So that went viral. And then the terrible, awkward hug that we talked about last week, which we're apparently going to see in slow motion now for some reason, that apparently went viral.
Shout
as
out
well.
To Max Ramsbottom. Did you see that? Max got the shot of Brian's face.
As it actually did.
That's like pure fear.
The look of utter panic. Yeah. Yeah, so, but like, I mean, I did other interviews. Like, I talked to Michael Douglas, very interesting talk with him.
People want to see you do the cringe stuff now.
Sure,
I
guess
that's
it. Yeah,
angle,
like, I mean, I talked to Evangeline Lilly about, you know, her screenwriting, you know, thoughts on the movie and stuff.
All
like
great
that.
Interviews.
Yeah. But everyone wants
no,
to
I listen
see,
to them.
But everyone wants to see, you know, me make a tool of myself at Paul Rudd, so. I'm happy to give the people what they want. You know what I mean? I'm here to give. I'm a giving person, here to give the people what they want.
I think the views...
Except Paul Rudd a hug.
Yeah.
That's the only thing like, you're not here to give.
Okay, but to be
did
fair...
Did you hug him when you were leaving as well?
Did I what?
Did you hug him when you were leaving as
no.
well?
No.
No,
I didn't. Like, why would I? Like, I mean, he was the one...
Well, like, you'll be just like, you know what, that thing is like, okay, I guess we hug now.
No, but like, okay, I don't like
like
hugging...
Like you broke that barrier.
We're huggers now. Yeah,
no,
huggers
but
now.
I'm not a hugger at all. Like, I don't like hugging people at all. Like, I really don't like it. Like, I have a real... No, this. We talked about this briefly. I have a real thing with like closeness, like not intimacy. I mean, like it's in like people getting too up in me in me personal space. That's it. Personal space. I have an issue with personal space. Stop looking at the camera.
No, I was looking at Dave.
These doing a Jim from the Office moment.
Yeah,
like.
I thought that was a big real Jim Halpert moment. Yeah, personal space. Okay, and like I don't know Paul Rudd. Like
I'm Brian. How did that make you feel?
Not great. Like, it's personal space. Okay, just keep away. Like, even right now, how near we are, I don't like it. I'm a little bit head up about
jeez,
it. Like,
thanks. Jeez,
God, what's your problem like?
It's nothing personal. I just don't like people personal space.
Well, I promise I won't hurt you.
Good. I know you won't.
Physically, but you're going to throw some little jabs dig throughout because it's too
yeah, because you hurt my feelings first.
Yeah, true. I know. Sorry.
I've got something that's going to cheer you up though, Brian.
I can't
got
wait to talk
cheer
about
you up.
This.
So, listener, / reader, / viewer, I had Simon Delaney on my show, The Delve, a couple of weeks ago, and Simon is a gem of a human being. We've spoken about him a bunch before, and an incredibly talented man. Now, we've spoken before on the show about our love for one Patrick Wilson, about our admiration, love, man crush, whatever you want to call it.
He's a really underrated actor.
Not only is he a really underrated actor... He's a marvelous singer, a Broadway star, has it all, Has it all.
He's a triple threat. That's
so
what they call
while
that.
Simon Delaney was in a couple of weeks ago, we were sitting inside having a cup of tea, and Simon took out his phone. I was like, I'm going to email Patrick now. Emailed Patrick Wilson, told him about the Fulham show, told him about us three, and this is what happened.
Mike, Brian, and Dee. Patrick Wilson here from across the pond. I'm calling one to say thank you for your genuine support and enthusiasm for me and my career. I would also just like to take a moment and really praise Ireland's greatest. And I don't mean Conor McGregor or Liam Neeson. I mean the lovely Simon Delaney. Simon and I go way back, even before Conjuring 2. We shared a scene in Police Academy 2 in the 80s when they're in the, I don't even know where I'm going with this, the zoo, and Steve Guttenberg is infiltrating the bad guys. We're in the back. And we hung out. We became really good friends. And we did theater throughout the 90s. And Simon did some questionable nudity in the Full Monty, which is something I know we all feel better about. But I just want to make sure that you guys, one, have his cookbook, are using all of his recipes. Watch him on TV, watch him on screen, watch him on stage. I mean, listen to his podcast, you know, watch his kids. I mean, he's really the guy, if nothing else, he is putting himself out there. That's all I got for you guys. I would do my Irish accent for you, but I know Mr. Delaney would really, really hate it and laugh. And I don't need to be laughed at today. That's more of a pirate, really. All right, thank you, guys. Take care. Hopefully I'll meet you someday. If nothing else, maybe you can come down to the Aquaman premiere if we have in London, which I'm sure we will at the end of the year. Okay, shameless plug for my Warner Brothers movie. Take care. Bye-bye.
So we've all been name-checked.
Yay! Like,
Patrick Wilson knows our names.
Like, from now on, I'm going to instigate this from now on. I am now going to get a framed picture of Patrick Wilson, and we're going to incorporate this into our set. I'm going to bring it in every time we're doing the film show. It's going to stay here. And every time somebody calls into the show, like Patrick Wilson, they'll get a framed...
Like Patrick Wilson, like, this is going to happen.
I don't care. Just Patrick Wilson, he's getting a framed picture. I'm going to make it today. And we're going to have a framed picture of Patrick Wilson.
You have a framed picture of David Hasselhoff out there, right?
I do, yeah. So just throw out David Hasselhoff.
The Hoff can do one. The Hoff can get in there.
And
but Patrick Wilson isn't ironically awesome. He's just awesome.
He's Like, really. Like, I mean, Fargo season 2, we've talked about it many times.
Best season
times.
Of television ever. Yeah. He's incredible in it. I loved him in Watchmen as well. I loved Watchmen.
Yeah, brilliant. I rewatched that over the weekend. He's great in it.
Isn't he? Like, really subtle. Yeah. Like, he's really subtle performance.
He's supposed to be great in Aquaman.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. Yeah, interesting choice.
Yeah.
Interesting choice for him. Like, he's kind of playing a bit of a villain in that.
Also, yeah. The A-Team underrated. Came out at the wrong time. But he's great, and he's kind of the kind of skeezy...
CIA guy
in it. Yeah. So Patrick Wilson is great. We love Patrick Wilson. We're gonna continue to talk about Patrick Wilson in such a loving way, because I mean, did you listen to that voicemail?
Can't believe you rang
that voicemail that he left.
That is nuts. Yeah.
We're an absolute gem, and a massive massive thank you to Simon Delaney, who is just he was just deadly and extremely talented, and very kind of him, very gracious of him to have that happen, because he's very busy. And he took a lot of time out of his day to make that happen.
Literally, yeah. I had to go down to the... He was
He's playing. Literally like Ryan Seacrest. Yeah. Like, he does 15
minutes. No, genuinely. Like, the day I got that recording, like, he had literally just come from Saturday AM to the gate where he was going to be...
It's curtains up at 2:30. Saturday AM finishes at 12 and then it's curtains up at 2:30.
Yeah, it's an intense run.
Yeah. And like, it was literally like standing in the middle of the gate recording that thing, and he was like looking at his watch because he had to go start doing rehearsals for the show he was doing in like 2 hours. Like, tell you, like, I don't know how he does it. Like,
so okay, I've got a conundrum for you, Brian. Right?
Oh yeah. Okay.
We meet Patrick Wilson. It's going to happen. We all know it's going to happen. We're probably going to be friends. We're probably going to go to his place. I'd say he's a place in Colorado or something. We're going to sit around, have some eggnog, maybe around Christmas or Thanksgiving.
Did you know his wife was in the Count of Monte Cristo?
But Brian Lloyd. You see Patrick Wilson. You're like, Patrick, hey, how's it going? Goes in for a hug. What do you do, Brian? What do you do?
I mean, the fact that he's like called into the show, I feel like that kind of... you know, there's an understanding now. You know, that kind of way. I think I could get it. I think I'd be okay with it.
Think you could
but this was the second time you'd met Paul Rudd.
Yeah, but like, I mean...
And you were still weird.
Yeah,
just
but like,
saying.
Sure, but like, I mean, there's been a bit of interaction between ourselves. I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I mean,
it's
he
like
knows
the hug. It's like the hug at the end of Step Brothers. The hug at the two brothers. they're like.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, a hearty handshake.
Patrick Wilson. I interviewed him years ago, but yeah. he's like a big guy.
Is
you
he?
Know, yeah. So I think he would engulf you a little bit.
The beat,
you know?
See, that's it, and that's what freaks me out. Like, that's what freaks me out. Like,
maybe you could like sing a Broadway song in your ear as he was hugging you.
Loving you is not a choice. That's a great
song. That's a great song.
That's a great song.
Well, he does a great job with that song.
Yeah,
you know, that's how I feel. Anyway, thanks, Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick Wilson.
Always will be. Always will be, Patrick. You were the best thing about the commuter, Patrick, and I mean that.
Yeah.
Okay. He was great in that.
He was great in the commuter. Yeah. Okay, let's talk.
We just totally like diverted there. Just talking about Patrick Wilson for 5 minutes.
Hey, it's an offer. You get movie stars calling into your show.
I mean, so, I'm very proud of that.
And we had to make a thing of it.
I'm very proud of that.
And inexplicably, somehow made a thing of it and had him call in. These things are important. Okay, let's talk Mission Impossible Fallout. We've all seen this one.
Yes.
Yes.
Brian reviewed it for the site.
I did.
So I want to give out to him about his review as I'm wont to do. But you really dug this too.
I really liked it. And over the past week, the more I thought about it, the more I've actually grown to like it and appreciate it. Because there are some action sequences in that really are like close to, I wouldn't say iconic, but they're so, so memorable, and they use like set pieces so well. There's that whole fight that takes place in the bathroom. There's the finale on the mountaintop, which is just awesome. There's that chase sequence through all of Paris, and I haven't seen a chase sequence like go on that long and have you just totally, you know, engulfed at the edge of your seat, and it's just awesome. I remember when Brian and I went to it, and Brian was, he was so cute. He was like a little kid. He was like getting all like excited, and oh, it was just adorable.
Is that why you prefer to be in the cinema on your own, Brian?
Yes. that's because you're just, yes.
Your visceral reaction. I get into it. They just can't be hit.
Yeah.
But I really, no, I think really,
thanks for ratting me out on that.
Yeah, but actually, it, like, I'm helping you out here because, I mean, I think it's a sign of a powerful film that you have that kind of visceral experience, that you're actually having like these proper physical reactions to it and everything, you know? So I think that that's a good sign, and I suppose that contributes to...
Your phone just went off!
Yeah, that was... I had my phone on for time, and Brian, I'm the
host. Whatever.
It was just a notification, like, yours was...
My phone went off, and, like, I got, like, my ass handed to me, and your phone goes off, and
my phone didn't go off as a notification for meeting you, dope. Your phone rang 2 weeks in a row.
It
and
did.
Then you left her on live on Ireland AM, and I didn't call you.
No, but you texted me, though.
Yeah, but you
and
had
it went off.
On,
as like, literally, like, if you go back, you can actually see my hand, like, trying to stop it from going off, because I had a feeling you were going to ring.
I was like, I was literally standing on the TV going, will I? Will I? Like, let's ruin Brian's career now. I mean, I liked it, because, as I mentioned at the top, we have Chris McQuarrie. Talk about, kind of do a lead-in of Way of the Gun for us for the revisit towards the end of the show. So I got to talk to him about it, and I'm a big fan of his. I loved Way of the Gun. And it feels like he's actually getting a bit more leeway with this one in terms of the action set pieces. Yeah. And I saw somebody, a critic writing about it, and I thought it was a really astute observation that every action sequence in it feels like a story beat as well, Brian. It doesn't feel like character, action sequence. Like, action sequence is just written. Everything feels like it has a purpose, even though
fluidity.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I love this so much, was the fact that once it starts, okay, fine. Dee said, we were talking about this after the film, Dee was saying that it felt like it took a while for it to get going, but, like, once it starts, it doesn't stop. Like, it is just barreling through. And, yeah, like, I mean, it is a very difficult thing to, as you say, have a fluidity and have an action sequence, have emotional content and have a story beat to it, as in progressing it along. The only other film I've seen that does it as well as that is Mad Max Fury Road. Mad Max Fury Road is...
But that's better because, like, you're in it, like, from the first second.
Yeah, true,
you know?
True. But in Mad Max Fury Road, once it gets going, it's just continuous. And the story is carried by the action rather than the action carrying the story. And like, it's very well done in the sense that it's so often nowadays when you see an action sequence, like something like, I don't know, Green Zone or anything by Paul Greengrass, you have that shaky camera, you're not really sure what's going on, the geography of the scene doesn't really kind of make any sense, and there's no kind of sense of, okay, what's actually going on here? Do you know what I mean? Because like very often when you have the shaky cam thing, they're just trying to capture that sense of chaos.
They're trying to capture that sense of urgency, which is what it's like to be in hand-to-hand combat. Exactly. Or whatever. It's a choice they make.
It is a choice. But I often feel that is kind of, it's sloppy. Do you know that sort of way? There's a sense of like, you're using that shaky cam, you're using that sense of urgency and chaos to kind of mask the fact that you just want there to be a scuffle. Do you know that sort of way? You want it to be sort of like, this happened and now it's gone on, we move on to the next thing. With Fallout, you can see that there is a really sharp sense of, okay, they're going to come in here, this is going to happen, then that's going to happen. It's so expertly staged. You can see every possible beat of the story happen, and you can see everything captured in camera. You know that kind of way? Like the way that Christopher Nolan blocks out action sequences, you can see that, you know, it's all done in camera. There is no CGI. It's like literally when the car smashes into it, the car smashes into it. When he's like driving through Paris, he literally is not wearing a helmet. When he's chasing after him in the helicopter at the end, that's really a helicopter chasing after him. And it's one of those things that, like, you can kind of see with CGI, I always feel when you're watching a CGI action sequence, your brain automatically knows that it's not real. And by essence then, I guess the stakes are kind of lowered a little bit, if you know what I mean? You can tell that it's a computer, you know, that kind of way. You can tell that this has been generated. Whereas if you actually see somebody literally hanging off the side of a helicopter, your brain just connects with that and realizes and gets a, holy crap, he's literally hanging off the side of the helicopter. And that automatically ups the stakes. So that's like when you were saying, like when we were watching, it was literally like, oh my God, he's literally hanging off the side of a helicopter. Yeah. Holy crap.
It was really cool.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, okay. What was your problems with it?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was way too long.
Was
two and a half hours long is too long.
I didn't feel that
length. I feel like the whole like Tom Cruise doing his own stunts thing has just been like wailed on. And like there's just nothing left of it. We know he does his own stunts.
Yeah.
We know he broke his ankle. And I don't know whether that's because I'm just consuming more of the press around it. I liked it a lot. I thought it was really good fun. I think Tom Cruise is the most popular movie star of all time for a very good reason. I think his charisma is probably unparalleled, especially in those action roles. I actually quite liked Henry Cavill in it as well.
I thought he worked really well as an opponent for him because he's so much taller and broader that when he's beating up Tom Cruise, it really looks like Henry Cavill is beating up Tom Cruise.
I thought that sequence in the bathroom was really strong. I loved that fight sequence. And I would have liked to have seen more of that.
Like the more one-on-one
The more one-on-one, stuff. The combat stuff. Because I don't think we've seen much of that in the Mission Impossible movies before. Everything has been so expansive and been so set-piece heavy. It's an incredibly impressive movie technically. It's Chris McQuarrie's best movie as a director since Way of the Gun. He's made two other movies. The Jack Reacher movie, made the last Mission Impossible. I thought the last Mission Impossible was fine as well. But I get it. I don't know if I quite get 5 stars from it.
Yeah.
But I get it.
Like, I know the reason why I gave it 5 stars was because when I came to the end of it, I was literally, I want to see this again. I would be perfectly happy to have sat down back in my seat and watched that all over again because it was that such a visceral response I got from it that it was like, I'm literally on the edge of my seat. I know that's kind of a cliche to say you're on the edge of your seat, but literally I was like, oh my God, what is going to happen next? I can't wait to see what happened next.
I think it is really the kind of quintessential blockbuster of the season because just you don't see action sequences. At least I haven't seen any action sequences of that scale in any other movies I've seen so far this year.
And even as well, it's the fact that like there's a level of experience with it, you know, that sort of way. Like you can tell that Christopher McQuarrie, because like, the way he lays out the action scenes, or even just the whole story, you can tell that like he's like, right, the obvious choice is to do X. I'm going to do Y, and here's why I'm going to do Y.
Well, that scene, because he spoke at length about it in the interview, was that scene where Tom Cruise does the sky jump.
Yeah.
Cruise obviously did tandem jump, but because another
halo jump.
A halo jump, sorry. So they have to wear the oxygen mask and stuff to do it. They're so high up. He said Cruise did that a bunch of times, obviously. They could only do a certain amount of takes because
of light.
It's the 3 minutes of light to get the light absolutely perfect. But he said they messed around with so many different ways of, because Tom Cruise wanted to be literally do every single beat of it to be real, to be on the plane, to be the last second before he jumped. He wanted to do all of it. And one of the things I said was, like everybody's talked about how impressive Tom Cruise is doing this stuff. I was like, and yeah, okay, get it. That's
sure,
kind
yeah.
of mad stuff to be doing, especially when you're a movie star and you don't have to.
Yeah.
But I made up the point. Everybody looks at Bear Grylls running around the place doing mad stuff going, oh, isn't that mad? I think, what about the cameraman? What about the cameraman with the backpack and the camera on his shoulder? And he talked about the cameraman then who had never worked, who got that shot.
Mm.
And he was saying it was he had a 3 inches for room of error to get the focus, because he said as Cruise jumps down,
yeah.
that's all real.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise had to like actually perfectly place himself as well. So there was a big thing in it with Cruise, and he had to pull focus.
Yeah.
All of that going on in that sequence just.
And that's what I'm saying. The level of skill and expertise that's on display. Like that for me, it was like that. Like as a technical achievement, this film is incredible. It's incredible. Like they, like just the, like the, like literally that. The fact that he actually hurled himself out of an airplane with a camera strapped to literally get one shot. Yeah. One shot. He could have done that in CGI. Nobody would have known, or he would have known, but. Like the fact that they did it for real,
but that the lighting had to be that perfect for those 3 minutes just kind of underlines.
Yeah.
I think McQuarrie's evolution as a director completely. As well.
And like listening to your back to your interview, it was amazing to hear him to say about how he felt so like annoyed at himself for having to cut it because he wanted it all to
in
be
one,
the one,
in one
take.
Shot, yeah.
And he was like, and I had to make a cut, and I'm like, the final product is amazing, but he still like expects so much of himself as a director, and I think that's why he makes such amazing films, you know, because he holds himself to such a high standard.
Yeah, and even he was talking about with the helicopter sequence at the end, he literally said, if I'd known it was going to be like this, I never would have done it, because it was that intense and it was that complex and difficult to shoot. He said, if we had started off knowing that we were going to finish up there, I never would have done it. Like, so I mean, for me, this is the best blockbuster I've seen this year, hands down. I have not seen a better blockbuster this year. And there's another part to this as well that I think is just finally just to kind of touch on it, is when you look at like something like Skyfall or the Bond series as a whole, there's always an element of kind of like, yeah, you can enjoy it, but there's always an element of like, this is a bit like, not tired is what I want to say, but there's always sort of like, with Mission Impossible, you can come to it guilt-free. I think that's always the way.
What guilt again from the Bond movies?
Just, like, you know, like, you could argue it's kind of like talking about, you know, British imperialism, British nationalism, you know, that sort of, that he's, you know, the British agent, you know, that sort of way.
Ethan Hunt is the American agent.
But he's not, though. He's it's an international team.
Yeah,
like.
But...
Like, I mean, you've got Simon Pegg and you've got Ving Rhames.
But that's literally every single action movie. Terrorists are going to do a thing and you have to stop the thing from whatever country you're from.
Yeah, I know. But so like, I'm just saying, there's just like with Mission Impossible, I always felt there was an element that you can come into it guilt-free. You know, that kind of...
I'm
not saying that's the reason why I give it.
I know, I get what you're saying, but as much as I enjoyed this one, it's not a patch on Skyfall for me.
Really?
Oh, Skyfall is like...
Jesus, no, I'd put this well above. Skyfall would have given 4 stars. This, I'm perfectly happy to give it 5 stars. I think it's that good.
What do you think, Dave?
I haven't seen Skyfall for years. I myself would give Mission Impossible Fallout 4.5 because I do think it's a bit long, and I do think like a half hour could have been taken out of that first act.
But where would you cut it? Like,
because once they, I don't know, I just don't
think
that
they needed...
You can't
really do that without getting into spoilers.
Yeah. I mean, basically, I don't think you really needed that kind of character establishment and build up. I think that he could have done that much kind of quicker, because once you get into the action, it's kind of like, well, this is what we came for anyway. And I think that he could have made like a simpler story and just gotten into the action quicker, because that is what we came for.
Yeah,
and that is what's good about it.
The plot is,
you know?
I mean, it's not convoluted. It's obviously well thought out.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of strings to it that have to come together that do, but to keep track of those different threads.
Mm-hmm. It's tough.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you need to provide context as well. Because like, if it was just literally like, I've got to go and get this bomb. Like, if it's literally that, that's a bit...
Yeah, but I mean, look at... I'm sorry, but I'm going to bring it up again. John Wick, one of the best action movies of the last decade. And it's like, guy kills his dog, steals his car, he goes after them. Like, that's
it's
it.
It's actually because I spoke to Chris McQuarrie about not necessarily about John Wick. No, because, and we'll get into it later with Way of the Gun, because McQuarrie kind of talked about his brother's one of his... weapons expert. So in Way of the Gun, and we'll get into that, it's very like... You're like, this is authentic. This feels
very
real.
Technically,
and he says, and I was like, you don't really see that a lot in movies. It's the only really movies you'd see that in is John Wick. Mm. And he was like, yeah, those guys are like, you know, they're really into it, but they're so good. So I think that's more a case of talent. And you know, been able to, you know, have an emotional impact with a story so simple.
But my point,
and Keanu Reeves.
True.
My point is just that for action movies, like the best action movies, you can kind of describe them story-wise in like a sentence. Because they just get into it. And it's just a simple formula. Think of the likes of like, you know, Die Hard, Speed. I know we've talked about those in previous weeks. But you know what I mean? I just felt that this didn't need to be so convoluted because like you kind of know what's going to happen.
Sure, but like that's Mission Impossible's all its hook. It's this really convoluted story about like, you know, there's missions and there's, you know, it's
impossible.
It's a, you know, like it's a mole hunt and like it's, you know, oh, there's backstabbing. It's like, oh, we don't know who to trust kind of thing. Like, because you look back at the first Mission Impossible, the one that Brian De Palma did, that's a complete psychodrama in the sense of like, it's, you know, him running around Europe terrified of like the people that are chasing him and he's not sure who to believe in. Literally like the whole mask pulls and stuff like that. And that's another thing that I loved about Fallout as well, was the fact that I felt it finally, not finally, but it embraced its ridiculousness. You know, that sort of way.
Oh, I know the scene you're talking about where there's like double crossing and double crossing. And like, it was so like self-aware. And like, we were in the audience and the audience was laughing. But I mean, even like in the,
that playfulness.
In the scene, you can see the actors kind of grinning at each other. Like they're having fun with it. You and know, because they know how it's ridiculous.
Exactly.
It
and that's, and what I loved about that was the fact that like the audience is in on the joke. Like literally everyone's watching. It's like, it's not a sort of like, oh, gotcha. It's like, come on, laugh. Let's see let's see how far this goes. Like, you know, that kind of.
So, would you put this in the best of year? In the best of the year, you've only given one out of 5-star review, Michael Inside.
Michael Inside,
So, like, two very different films, obviously. Would you have this in your?
100%.
Yeah,
100%.
What about you, D?
100%.
In my best of the year.
Yeah.
Top 10.
Four and a half is lofty, right?
That's high up, like.
Yeah. Speaking of which, of like one lines for action movies, went to see Skyscraper last weekend, purely for the air conditioning, if I'm being honest. It was a very muggy Sunday. Sunday. And like, it was like, I had to host the thing on Saturday and The Rock was not, he wasn't there, but talking about him and he was a part of it. And they showed a trailer for Skyscraper and I got up and I said, The Rock versus a Skyscraper, huh? Who doesn't want to see that fight? And I went to see it on Sunday and that's exactly what it was. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, Dick. Yeah. You were like, really?
You're weird.
You were like, really? And he's only got one leg.
I don't get your taste sometimes, Mike. I got to be honest.
It's eclectic, right? It's eclectic.
Yeah. It's what you want, like.
But I mean, there are no stakes. You know, you watch it and you're like, he's going to be fine. You know?
And there's a lot of him doing pull-ups.
Yeah.
Like, literally pulling himself up. Like, there's a lot of that.
But like, well, I mean, he is missing a leg.
Yeah, true.
But the whole time I was watching, it was like, oh, I'd rather be watching Die Hard. Like, I'd rather be watching,
that's what
like,
I was thinking watching it.
The whole time it was like,
I mean, it's a 3-star film, I agree with you. I just enjoyed that three, you know, that element of it a bit more.
Exactly. And like, low expectations say a lot. Like,
that's very true as well. But I would have liked it more if it was an R rated, you know, because you do miss that impact a little bit.
Yeah,
so I think there was a lot of potential there with the villain and that kind of stuff, to have a proper homage. But I, you know, I tell you exactly what happened there as well.
Go on.
They were like, okay, where is Dwayne Johnson, a superstar? He's a global superstar. Where is he really big, right? He's really big in America. He's really big in China. So I'd say the writer-director, Tuber, was like, I got this idea for the world's biggest skyscraper.
And we put it in Hong Kong.
No, they were like, LA, New York. And he's like, no, Hong Kong, Dwayne's huge in China. You know, we'll make the money back there. Which is probably what will happen because it hasn't done that well at the domestic box office.
I mean, they did it with Transformers. That made
That kept existing because of the money it made in Asia, I suppose.
There you go.
Up until Bumblebee, which we're really looking forward to. That's next.
Bumblebee, I'm really looking forward to that. Apparently, they showed footage of it at San Diego Comic Con over the weekend.
Oh, really? And, how did it go down?
Very well. Like, a lot of people are saying, like, it's basically like an Amblin movie. And I'm like, that's...
Oh, that's a really good
compliment.
When
I heard that, I heard that, I was like, yes, I'm ready for that.
So I think that was certainly what he was going for, from what I've heard.
Yeah. And I'm excited. I can't believe I'm excited about a Transformers movie. Like, that's ridiculous. Like.
Deadly. Okay. So, so that's it, really, this week, review-wise. D, you're away next week.
I am away
next week. So it's just going to be me and Brian.
Yeah.
Ox. Oh, no. Dave, can we give you a mic next week? Will you say stuff to make it less awkward with me and Brian?
Yeah.
Yes.
Great.
He's just going to come out with the one-liners the whole time.
You can do my movie news section.
Do you want to do these movie news section next week?
Do I?
You can't be on, you can't be on screen, though, because you're too handsome.
Thank you.
There we are.
Distracting.
Deadpan Dave. Distracting. Strikes again.
Deadpan producer Dave. All right, Deirdre.
I have
that was so half-assed. Oh my God, that's the most half-assed.
I every week.
I know, but I'm just
going on holidays.
You come back from holidays, you'd be like, dude.
You're so checked out, like you're just like, yeah, whatever, yeah, just kick on there. You are so checked out.
It's been a long week. Okay, I have four pieces of movie news this week because we only had the one movie to review. So starting off with Robert De Niro maybe joining the cast of Joaquin Phoenix's latest movie. Oh, Brian doesn't seem very happy about this. Also, by the way, Zazie Beetz is meant to be joining it. And I'm
she's
so
awesome.
Excited
yeah,
about
she's
that.
Awesome.
She's
Deadpool
so,
too. Yeah.
So cool. But Robert De Niro is reportedly in talks to play a talk show host who is partly responsible for the Joker's descent into madness. This would be his first role in a comic book adaptation or a superhero movie. But Brian is displeased about this.
Why are you displeased, Brian? This is Todd Phillips directing, Martin Scorsese producing.
Yeah, I think that they're kind of the names that brought in De Niro because Todd Phillips kind of pitched it to De Niro as this kind of 80s noir, like
King of
dark
comedy
movie,
kind of thing.
As opposed to
King
like
King of
kind
Comedy
of a,
makes sense with the talk show thing and Martin Scorsese attached.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you have to sell to Robert De Niro now? Here's money, Rob.
Yeah.
Or Bob, if you're friends with him.
Yeah.
Here's money, Bob. And he's like, all right.
Yeah, like he's not like... I actually wrote an entire article about why the Joker Origins movie is a terrible idea. You can read it, but the cliff notes of it is that...
Thanks, because I'm not going to read it.
Yeah, but a few months later, you wrote that Nick Cage would make a good Joker.
He would! Nick Cage would make a fantastic
in
Joker.
In an Origins movie?
No! See, this is it. The Joker is supposed to be... You're not supposed to know where he comes from. You're not supposed to know
where
it comes from.
That's just Heath Ledger's interpretation of it.
That's all of them.
In the first one, you see him go mad, like in Jack Nicholson's
performance,
right? Yeah,
but like, yeah, sure. But it's more just a sort of, it's an escalation rather than it's sort of like, this is how he came to be. It's sort of like, he was this terrible person to begin with anyway. Mm. And then he just literally got a bit
of
face paint.
Well, maybe that was something that they were going to get into if Heath Ledger hadn't passed away, because Bane's given a whole backstory as well in The Dark Knight Rises. So
it's just like, yeah, but like, I mean, he's supposed to be this force of nature.
Well, that universe has context. That universe has, this is who the Joker was. This is where there's a whole show about called Gotham that's based on the origins of these things. So why not a movie?
I just don't think it works. Like, he's supposed to be this... question mark, you know, that sort of way. He's supposed to be this, like, we don't know where he comes from. We just know that every time he turns up, there's chaos, and that's it. You can't, like trying to sort the origin of chaos as a concept doesn't work. That's it. Like, Joker is the embodiment of chaos.
Yeah, but the character, the element of the character, no, I'm like...
No, I don't think it works. Like, I really don't think it works. Like, look... I think they're coming at it with the best intentions. They've said, like, you know, they're going to set a budget of $50 million, that Todd Phillips is really going to go for that King of Comedy 80s noir thing.
Like, Todd Phillips is a very good director.
He is, yeah, he is.
Phoenix is a great actor.
Sure, like, I mean, it has everything going for it.
Come on. You don't want to see Joaquin Phoenix go toe-to-toe with Robert De Niro. Come on.
Two
great actors of different generations.
100%, yeah, 100%.
Like, shut your face, Brian.
I'm saying it has everything. I'm saying it has everything going for it. I'm saying it has everything going for it. What annoys me is the fact that, like, why can't they make an original film? If there was an original film that Todd Phillips was going to direct, well, Joaquin Phoenix and Robert De Niro, I'll be there, front row, ready to do it. There isn't really an original Joker movie.
Ever now.
It's just a character you know of because of the Batman movies.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. So, like, why are they taking an existing character that has this legacy and then just trying to funnel their own, you know, take? I'm against it.
All right, T, before we move on to the next story, because isn't the one with Jared Leto still happening, that suicide?
Yeah, that's the one I'm like, nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, so Warner Brothers are still planning on a standalone movie for Jared Leto's interpretation of the Joker, and he's still meant to play the character in Suicide Squad 2.
Now...
which I don't really care to see, but
Gavin O'Connor's doing it, isn't he?
Yeah.
Gavin O'Connor, the accountant, warrior. I mean,
solid.
And the last one's a mess. Lowered expectations.
Yeah, I mean, Jared Leto has said that, you know, his kind of portrayal of the Joker didn't really have a chance because, like, they edited out a bunch of footage, and maybe that's true. I mean, we've seen bits in the trailer that never made it to the movie, so maybe there was more substance to, you know, his particular portrayal of it. But I just think that I just don't like it. It wasn't a fit for me, like, when I heard about it, and even when I saw it, it just
when that movie came out, I think what happened there, Will Smith came on board and every other role shrunk. I think that's exactly, and because then Tom Hardy bounced as well for a scheduling conflict. So every other role there shrunk, and Tom Hardy was probably like, yeah, good luck, I'm off. So the only other person who had an opportunity to stand out and who stand out and who 100% did was Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
Who was
as
like,
Harley Quinn, yeah.
As Harley Quinn was awesome. And the Harley Quinn movie I want to see. The Joker movie with Jared Leto. And all those stories going around about him, like kind of, and we'll move on now, but all stories around him, about him on set and like...
Sending disgusting things.
Like,
yeah,
absolute shithead.
Cool. Yeah, like, yeah. Like,
get it.
Yeah, like it's get some ethos around the movie. This isn't the 80s. This is the internet now. People can Google this stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, all of it is just seems like...
Just do my so-called life reunion and get it over with.
Right? Jordan Catalano. I want to see him back as Jordan Catalano. I will watch that before I'd watch him do another Joker.
They call them bangs. He has the bangs.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, I would watch the hell out of that. I really would. My so-called life was brilliant. It's a great show. What are you looking at me for? It was a great show. Shut up.
I never saw it.
Really?
He's too young. Go on, what else have you got to eat? Yeah, too young.
Oh,
it was like early 90s.
Jonah Hill is directing now. Mike is... Okay, I've got you getting upset about the last news story.
Yeah.
You getting upset about this one. Like,
I'm going to let you finish, though. I apologize.
Okay. So Jonah Hill previously has directed music videos. But this is his very first movie. It's called Mid-90s. A24 are attached to distribute it, which I think is a really good sign because, I mean, they've done some really great films over the past few years, like Hereditary, The Disaster Artist, Florida Project, Moonlight, Lady Bird. So, I mean, they believe in it. Yeah, so if they believe in it, I think that that's a really good sign. It's a coming-of-age film and set in Los Angeles in the 90s, obviously. And it stars Catherine Waterston, you know, the one from Alien Covenant and Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Lucas Hedges, who we talked about last week for that trailer. And Sonny Suljic, who people who've seen The Killing of a Sacred Deer will recognize as the little brother.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, which Killing of the Sacred Deer was also A24, actually. So it's all like connected.
But, they're incredible little movies.
Yeah. So, yeah, I saw the trailer for it and it piqued my interest.
Jonah Hill is a very talented man. Very talented
man.
He's a great actor. Like, I don't throw that word around lightly. He's a great actor.
Yeah.
And in terms of the like range he's able to show.
Yeah.
Comedically, there's very few people on his level. And that's when you see somebody like him who gets small roles and stuff like Forgetting Sarah Marshall or Knocked Up and being able to make those moments hilarious and memorable. Like, there's very, like, Paul Rudd can do it. There's very few actors of Seth Rogen, Jason Segel, whoever, who can do that. Lizzie Mann's actually very good at it as well. But
the
point is very few people can do it and have those moments stand out.
Yeah.
And he's been nominated for a couple of Oscars. He can obviously act. I've just interviewed him a few times.
And he's a tough interview.
Well, he's a tough interview. And some people are tough interviews. But Jonah Hill has a staggering pretentiousness. And watch him on Jimmy Kimmel. And the last time he was on Jimmy Kimmel, he's difficult to watch speak. He's just difficult to, like...
Well, I always think of that...
Maybe that's when he's doing... Yeah. Publicity or whatever, I don't know.
Yeah, but like, I mean, you even think back to that interview he did with The Late Late Show of Ryan Tuberty.
Yeah, Channing Tatum was on as well.
Yeah, and it was a car crash. And it's nothing against Tubbers at all, like, because I mean, it's...
But I heard that he was kind of like weird and awkward as well. It just sounded like it was kind of everyone was,
it
wasn't the right mix.
Sure, but like I'm saying,
that's
Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill didn't help it. Like, that's what I'm saying. He didn't help it at all.
Like, I mean, typically with those type of interviews, neither of those guys have anything serious to say. It was for a 21 Jump Street movie. I did that. I did 22 Jump Street.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did the interview that day as well. Channing Tatum is a gentleman. He's a really nice man. He's very polite, always super nice. Jonah Hill's just a difficult guy.
Yeah.
And with those type of interviews, like Tubbs is probably thinking, okay, look, I'll ask about the movie, it's about Hollywood or whatever, and, you know, it's light.
Yeah, of course.
And then if Jonah Hill shuts down, you're like, well, this is awkward because
I wasn't expecting
this. I'm softballing you, you dickhead.
Yeah.
You know? But I would very much expect this to be a decent film because he's a very, very talented man. Yeah.
He's also written it, and he does have, like, a few writing credits to his name at this point. He was a co-writer on 21 Jump Street, 22 Jump Street, Why Him, and Sausage Party. Of course, like, all of those are from a comedy background, so it'll be interesting to see how he does with... from my understanding, this looks like straight drama. And I mean, like, the boy in it is kind of like being bullied by his older brother in it and everything. And he's kind of being like integrated into the skating community, the skateboarding community. So it looks like fairly, you know, like really playing it straight. Like,
sounds
not
like
really
an emo's wet dream, to be honest with you.
Lords of Dogtown.
Yeah.
I really love that movie. Remember Lords of Dogtown? No?
It was a skateboard movie. We had to go back to Catherine Hargreaves in The Office in the last episode.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I was really pissed that you took that interview. Well, I know you had to take it, but like, I mean, I really wanted to talk to her about Lords of Dogtown. I could have talked about that all day. Anyways.
Okay, what else you got, Dee?
Dave Bautista is fighting terrorists at a football match in the trailer for Final Sold. Score.
I saw, like, Sold. I literally saw producer Dave just like peek up there, like, football match? Dave Bautista? Terrorists?
You're talking what? About sports?
What? Sports? So sure.
I saw the trailer for this the other day and it's
looks ridiculous.
Cinema. It looks ridiculous, but so, so much fun. So the reason why I find this kind of interesting is Sky Cinema are going in for their own like original movies now, kind of in a similar move to what Netflix did. Now, sometimes they're not good. I'm thinking of that family film, Monster Family, Anon, which you loathed.
I hate it.
But I saw The Hurricane Heist earlier this year. And remember, like, I was saying that it was really good.
You got really on board with that.
It was so much fun. It was so, like, it was so bad, it was good. You know, it was definitely one of those. And I'm hoping that this one will be of a similar ilk. So in the film, Bautista basically plays this kind of ex-soldier who then these criminals come in and are holding 35,000 fans at the match hostage. So he has to use his particular set of skills to save them all. Come on, guys!
I know. No, I like.
Do you know who directed it?
Who?
Scott Mann.
Don't know.
Who also directed Bautista in Heist, which I haven't heard of. Pierce Brosnan is in it as well.
He plays a Russian villain.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, we don't know if he's a villain.
Okay.
But like, I love the
His
title.
His name's Dmitry.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, he sounds Russian.
I love the title though. Final Score. Come on. Like, that's so, like, you see? Like,
Dave,
like,
producer Dave is into it.
He's the first one.
Okay, I'm in.
Like, Final Score, like, come on. Like, that's just the best. Like,
I mean, the timing of this trailer and everything was brilliant. I mean, like, a few weeks ago, obviously, World Cup.
Oh yeah, sure, yeah.
And they couldn't have released it during the World Cup because it's like, you know, terrorists at a football match. Like, that's a bit dodge. Yeah.
Don't blow us up.
But like the timing of this is just brilliant.
That sounds like great crack.
When
can we see that?
So this is the thing. They kind of essentially what Sky Cinema does is it releases it on the actual Sky Cinema channel on the same day as it goes out in cinemas, but I'm not sure if it'll be releasing in cinemas here or if it'll be a limited release or whatever, but it'll be available from September 7th, which is very soon.
I'm in. Dave Bautista deserves like a kind of a leading man role. See how
he's
he gets
a, like, there's another one who's a really underrated actor.
Yeah,
like you look at like that scene he did. Like, I know he's only in one scene in Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, he did that scene. Short though. Remember in the run up to it, and he was brilliant.
He's in the Kickboxer remake as well.
Yeah, that's right. Is that the one that's directed by Slider from Top Gun?
Yeah,
yeah,
that's gosh. Slider from Top Gun's directed a lot of movies.
Yeah,
he's directed Into the Blue and a bunch of other movies. Yeah. We don't know his name, but just call him Stockwell. John Stockwell.
Yeah, Slider from Top Gun.
And he is really great in the Guardians of the Galaxy film. I mean, really, in the first film, he's so essential to like that emotional core because like with the tragedy of his family story and everything.
But he's hilarious.
Then in the second film, he's like the comic relief, and he just like fits into that.
Ridiculous
like, position so well. Like,
okay, so,
so
before we move on, we can't talk about Guardians of the Galaxy and Dave Bautista and not mention James Gunn. So what do we think is going to happen? Do you think they're going to be rehired?
I'll tell you, and actually...
By the time this goes out,
who knows? Yeah.
Right, yeah. I'll tell you, here's what I think.
Dave Bautista got 100% behind him.
Everyone's got behind him. Like, the whole cast are behind him. Here's my hot take, right? Ready for this?
Brian's hot take.
Hot take, here we go. There is no way on God's green earth that Disney are going to take James Gunn back. They are just not going to do it for a number of reasons. Here's two. First off, right? No, genuinely. First off.
I like your command of the mic.
I'll tell you what it is, right? First of all, Disney are not going to take James Gunn back for the very simple reason that once they say something, it's law. They don't go back on a decision. At all. Just Disney don't do that. They rarely, if ever, reverse course because they're too big, right? Second of all, Disney are so, and I mean you have no idea how controversy averse Disney are. They will, like, here's an example, right? In the 90s, or yeah, late 90s, when ABC had the Ellen DeGeneres sitcom, right? Remember that whole thing with her? I remember when she came out on it.
Yeah.
They. ABC, Disney own ABC, insisted that there be a, I guess you would say, warning, if you like, about the content of the show before they showed it. Like, that's ridiculous.
Kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah. Right? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they literally had to have, they had to slap a warning on the Ellen sitcom.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Yeah. That but I mean, ridiculous. That's yeah, yeah. like, I mean, there's, okay, I get what you're saying. And yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I don't think Disney can go back on that decision. No. I think it was a very dangerous decision that they made.
It was a knee-jerk reaction.
Well, like, first of all, look at Disney's history as a studio. Look who's in charge of Disney, was in charge, or founded Disney. Look at some of the racial undertones in some of their films, some of the earlier films. So language changes over time. And
it's hypocrisy.
But that's by no means excusing, like, James Gunn's jokes, but they were jokes.
Oh, no,
I just feel like at the end of the day, they were 10 years ago, and it's not like he did apologize and address them.
Yeah.
And that's why I think the whole thing is, like, ridiculous. I think it was a knee-jerk reaction, and I think it was
completely
a bad one.
I think they should have
actually done a bit of reading up and researching and knowing the facts, that this was what he said, this is how he addressed it since.
Yeah.
I think it was a bad call.
I mean,
again, it's bad for the franchise as well.
Oh, yeah, really bad. Really bad. I mean,
this is his vision.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, like, another part of this as well is that, like, another thing that people are talking about, and it's very worth discussing. The people who actually dragged this crap up, they are scumbags. Like, that Mike Cernovich guy, he is a scumbag of the highest order. So, like, him going around thinking that he's, like, morally righteous, none of them are. Like, I mean, it is ridiculous. Like, that guy might, like, all of those people who brought this stuff up, all the alt-right people, they are scumbags of the highest order. And you might think, hey, I'm, like, you know, tarring them with a brush because, you know, my own political kind of leanings are against it. That's not it at all.
You're alt-left.
Whatever.
I don't know.
There is no.
You're the opposite of alt-right.
Well, whatever. But my point is that those people are scumbags themselves. Mm. Like, and I'm, you know, I'm repeating that word. I mean it. So, like, who are they to be, like, doing anything like this? You know, like, the only reason that they brought this up was because James Gunn is a very outspoken critic of Donald Trump. That's literally it. There is no other reason they brought this crap up. It's literally because of that.
No, I was just going to add to that. Like, just my frustration with this is, what kind of pattern are we setting for, like, the future? Because, like, you go back over anyone's career and you're going to be able to bring up any shit
literally
anyone has said, any actor, any director, anyone in kind of any industry.
It's not even that.
And you can, like, kind of ruin their career over it, and I just think that that's really messed up, especially when they have actually apologized since. Like, if it's getting to the point where we can't forgive someone, then you just have to kind of monitor and censor everything you say from now on. It's just creating a system of madness.
I think when everybody who's worked with that person comes out and is like, he's a good human being, he's a fundamentally decent human being, he treats everybody well, and you know, you have to kind of be like, well, look, this is quite, it was a stupid move. But I think other than that, there's two other points quickly before we move on. Language changes massively over time.
Sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you watch stand-up comedy specials from 10 years ago,
yeah,
the language will make you feel uncomfortable for some of the language they use and some of the slurs they use. If you go back to the 80s,
it's even worse.
It's even worse. Yeah. But never mind stand-up specials. You know, I watched Adventures in Babysitting recently, and I was like, oh, God. It's silly that I'm shocked by that. It was a movie of its time, and the language has evolved, and people don't talk like that anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's just
context.
So exactly, you can go back and look from 10 years previous, a tweet, completely out of context. James Gunn sees himself as a provocateur at the time, was very funny as well. I used to read blogs that he wrote and stuff, and they were very funny. He was very edgy.
Yeah.
And now he's Marvel and he's Disney, and he's expected to be and his past is expected to not have existed. Like, people, but anyway.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, just final point in this, and this is the bit that I was like, when they hired James Gunn, I knew about Slither and I knew about Super, but that was it. But I remember it was
PG porn.
Yes! That's it. Somebody showed me that. It was like, they got him to do this?
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
So the whole point of it, and he got really good actors here as well, because he's friendly with a lot of, like, Justin Bell and stuff in Hollywood. Yeah.
But what I was saying was that, like, they knew who he was.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's
the sensibility came from the trauma.
Yeah, exactly. Trauma. Lloyd Graham, yeah. They knew what he was about. Or Lloyd Kaufman, rather, sorry. They knew what he was about.
Anyway, I think Disney are setting a dangerous precedent for people like Jimmy Kimmel, because Jimmy Kimmel's on ABC.
Yeah.
And maybe, like, Jimmy Kimmel's a comedian known for pushing the boundaries. Great, love the man. But maybe he'll say something that people don't agree with, or he said something 20 years ago that somebody didn't agree with, now at its age badly, and they're going to have to get rid of him. Anyway, okay.
Like one man show. Like,
yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah, and Adam Carolla.
Yeah.
Okay, so one more story, Dean.
My last piece of news. This is hot off the presses, just in this morning. And I think this sounds gas. So Ryan Reynolds is... Yes, I made Dave producer laugh. Yes. Ryan Reynolds is involved with a reimagining of Home Alone, which is called Stoned Alone. Nobody likes my stories today, except for the one about Dave Bautista. So Fox is reimagining the family-friendly film as an R-rated flick. Ryan Reynolds is attached to produce. It'll basically follow a 20-something weed-growing loser who misses the plane for his holiday ski trip. He decides to make the most of things by getting high, and then he thinks that there are invaders in his house. They're actually are invaders in his house. He thinks he's paranoid, but they're actually there. I think that this sounds like great
fun. That sounds like really good fun. What's your problem over there?
No, it's
just a cynic.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Grant. It's such a weak concept.
No, it's not great concept.
No, it's great.
Think, why is that a weak concept?
It's just Home Alone, but with, like, you're stoned.
Eh, that's weak? Yeah, get Macaulay Culkin to do it.
How amazing would that be?
He's had his
too old though. He's like 36 now.
And he's like had trouble with drugs as well. I'd say.
Like so was Russell Brand, and he did some of his best work in Down to the Greek.
Would be key though, who they'll have as a lead. If they're saying Ryan Reynolds is producing, obviously he's not going to star in it, and it's a 20-something-year-old. So yeah, I think that cast will really be key here.
You just know they're going to get Joe Pesci or Daniel Stern, like the Wet Bandits, to come back to do it. It would be good.
Joe Pesci won't do anything now.
No.
But didn't he do the Irishman?
Yeah, Scorsese though.
Yeah, but he literally had to like work that entire shooting schedule just to get him in for it. Like, it was crazy.
I think that sounds like great crack. I really enjoyed your stories this week. I just don't like Jonah Hill personally.
Fair enough.
There we go.
I enjoyed them all as well.
Don't mind his face, Steve.
I did. I enjoyed them all.
No, you didn't. You were like...
Final score. I really want to see that. Yeah. Come on. Like, what a great... Yeah, you're nodding. Yeah, of course you are. Right.
Okay, let's move on to the revisits. Before we do... we have a unique opportunity and something we should try and do, I think, going forward when we have a bit of time with directors who've made films we're big fans of or we would like to revisit, to kind of ask them about it. So I caught up with Chris McQuarrie and Henry Cavill for The Delf. It's live on The Delf's YouTube now and on iTunes, etc. The Delf, like and subscribe. Thank you. So here's a quick couple of minutes of Chris McQuarrie talking about Way of the Gun.
What was it like post, because you took your time before you directed Way of the Gun, when you first won the awards for The Usual Suspects script? What was it like? What was it like being in Hollywood and being this Oscar winning screenwriter?
Not what I expected. It that happened obviously very early in my career. That was only my second film, and that immediately distorts your sense of what is real and what is possible. I was very young, I was very naive, and I thought that having that award would give me the power to do things. But as a writer, it didn't. It only gave... What it meant was they would pay me more money to make their movies. They were not going to give me money to make mine. And I struggled with that. And it took... No one sat me down and explained that to me. I had to figure that out the hard way, and I'm a very slow learner. Then there was a movie that I wanted to direct... about Alexander the Great, and I knew I couldn't direct that first, so I embarked on a directing career as a means to an end. And of course, being the very slow learner I am, I tried to make anything but a crime film. Nobody wanted anything from me but a crime film. And instead of playing ball, I made a very antagonistic crime movie that was sort of, with both middle fingers extended, saying, I'm going to make a crime film, but I'm going to make it my way. And then was surprised to find out that it wasn't a commercial success, and that nobody cared that I had written The Usual Suspects. They just wanted their movie delivered to them. And The Way of the Gun doesn't do that. It's a very challenging film, and it's one that demands that you pay close attention and read into it. And I learned the hard way that people get very angry about that sort of thing. They reject it.
We're going to revisit The Way of the Gun on another show we do called The Film Show this week, because the authenticity in that film, first of all, the opening scene, and I know there's a back and forth about the opening scene. You're setting a template from the start. You're kind of going, we're going to mess with you here from the start.
Yes.
But it's such an authentic film, and the guys are, there's that kind of shootout, and the guys are backing off. And you had a Navy SEAL. You knew somebody who was a guns expert or something?
My brother. He was a technical advisor on all my films. He worked on this film.
It just seems so authentic.
Yeah.
You don't see movies really like that anymore, but, maybe with the introduction of the streaming services, could you see more Way of the Gun type gritty, grimy crime films coming out?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, it takes time. And it's not necessarily what you would call, it's not necessarily the most dramatic, energetic thing. are that the tendency is to make films that have a lot more kinetic energy and are a lot more impactful. What we focused on was how-to. I really like how-to stuff. So the idea of watching guys reload, how often it takes to reload, techniques, what happens when you're shot in the arm, and all of that stuff, that's what we put into the movie to give it that sense of authenticity.
You're seeing elements of that now even in other action movies like the John Wick movies. There's an emphasis put on those small moments that just seem to add to the overall experience. Yeah.
Well, those guys, they're into that stuff. I mean, they're really, they understand that that's the stuff that makes those things exciting. They're also brilliant filmmakers. I mean, that stuff looks fantastic. I don't know how they do that.
Well, I'm looking forward to rewatching The Way to Go, and it's been way too long. And congratulations on the movie, and congratulations on the reviews. Delighted to see it doing so well.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm a little freaked out by that. That's a little overwhelming.
Okay, so I went to see this one when I was in college, and like loved every minute of it, and loved Chris McQuarrie's anarchic kind of like
crazy.
Mm. That opening alone, I love this film. I said Tom's in my top 10, and it is. It really is in my top 10. You rewatched the prime.
I did.
You actually rewatched the reboot.
I did. I watched them all.
And I watched it for the first time, so yeah. I'm visiting rather than revisiting it.
The visit. Just watching a film.
Yeah. Yeah, this is good, yeah. Dig it. Yeah, cool.
And here was the thing. Some deep pockets, a pregnant woman, some bodyguards, and a doctor's name. Now, the longest distance between two points is a kidnapper and his money. But we were through jerking off.
What I think about Way of the Gun is Ryan Felipe and Benicio del Toro. If you were to say today, yes, we're going to get Benicio del Toro and Ryan Felipe to do an action movie.
You sure it's Felipe? I thought it was Philippe.
Philippe? Whatever. I don't know. Philippe? I don't know. Whatever. You wouldn't put the two of them together at all, is my point. You wouldn't
put them together then either.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. Then or now, you just wouldn't put the two of them together. But it works. Like, the dynamic between them is so sharp and lived in and just really authentic. You know, that kind of way. It's a crazy movie. Like, it's so nuts. Like, I mean, I was reading up
like
stuff
about... they steal a pregnant woman. Like...
Literally that.
How do you even think of this
Where
stuff?
Does that even come from? But that's it. Like, that nuts... How nuts the whole film is. You can tell that Christopher McQuarrie was literally on his last bit of...
He was trying to get an Alexander the Great movie made.
Yeah.
But he knew he wasn't going to get it made as his first.
That's right. Mm. And he was just going crazy with it. And he was just like, right, screw this. I'm going to write the most out there, nuts
film.
Well,
he told me the only movie he could get made was a crime movie.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted anything else from him.
Yeah.
And he was like, right.
So I'm going to make the most.
It was a big FU to, I think, everybody. And that opening was one that they messed around with a lot, wanted him to change a lot.
Yeah.
So he made it worse. That's something that David Fincher did with Fight Club as well.
Yeah.
Every time we'd go back to the studio, he'd be like, can you change that? He would make it worse.
Yeah.
And that's something that he did. But I mean, you can't get through this without mentioning James Caan either, do you? James
Caan. Oh, he's fantastic.
This kind of like old bagman. It's just like...
Yeah. Yeah. I love him. Yeah, I love him in like loads of stuff. Like all over his career. Like he had obviously... Well, the one I always go to is kind of an example of his old stuff is Misery, because he is great in that. Yeah. I mean, I know everyone talks about Kathy Bates, but really for him to kind of play the emasculated victim, like that's not an easy performance, you know? And then in this, I really liked him. I love him in Elf as well.
Yeah.
I just think he's great in that, like the straight,
these
like just putting up with all
of
that's what's so funny about it. And then it's also like fairly close to, what is the actress's name, Juliette Lewis. It's fairly close to her performance in Natural Born Killers as well. You forget that all these movies are like so close together and everything.
She was an indie darling,
but anyway,
for a while,
very much.
But I have to disagree with you about I wasn't mad about Ryan Philippe in this film.
Really,
I love Benicio del Toro. I thought, I don't know, he's too pretty. I don't believe him as like a criminal.
I kind of saw him in a kind of James Dean kind of way.
His pouty face annoys me.
Yeah.
I remember at the time, such a pouty face.
At the time he got like jacked, like he put on a lot of muscle to do. He was already in good shape.
Yeah.
He obviously wanted to be an actor. But I take your point. I think nowadays it's like the comparison would be Zac Efron.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Zac Efron in a movie with Benicio del Toro.
Yeah, literally.
Really
well
respected, you know, Oscar winning actor. He'd won an Oscar for The Usual Suspects, as had Chris McQuarrie.
Yeah.
But I love this movie. And even
Hang on. We got to talk really quickly. We got to talk about that scene when Benicio del Toro and James Caan go for the coffee.
That's such a good scene.
Like they're like, you know, that great line. That's one thing that I love about this movie is that there are so many great lines in it. The bit where he's like, you know, guys nowadays just want to be a criminal rather than do a crime. Like,
yeah.
And they, and James Caan's like, well, that's just kind of the way the world is nowadays. Like that, that's so smart.
But that shootout at the end as well, which is brilliantly staged.
We mentioned about
Macquarie's authenticity and for a first movie as well. It was so long till he ended up directing Jack Reacher and directing a second movie. Obviously, he wanted it to be right. But he falls on a glass.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a funny moment until you hear him, and he's like, oh, like it's, God, he's actually
in real agony, himself. Like literally ripping it.
So that was playing with the audience a little bit too. But Macquarie said as well, you know, it's, you know, we see a lot of times with directors that the second movie they made or the first movie they make, they get an opportunity to make a first one that doesn't do well. And a second one, the best movies are very rarely seen as the best movies until 10, 15 years later. So that's what he was kind of saying. You know, because I was like, you know, we studied this in college. We loved it.
Yeah.
And he was blown away by that. You know, now he's making $250 million movies with Tom Cruise.
But I mean, when you watch it, you can see why, like, it wasn't a mainstream hit. Because even by today's standards, it's not really a mainstream movie. It's very much a, like, cult movie with, like, kind of iconic scenes and iconic moments and iconic quotes and everything, but it doesn't even flow like the way you think it does. And I mean, there are so many like coincidences and connections in it to the point where it gets kind of almost silly, but it's also like self-aware, but it's almost like self-aware ahead of the time when movies became really self-aware, if you know what I mean. So like, I know that saying it's ahead of its time. I know Brian much prefers when movies are of their time, but it is ahead of its time.
You didn't say it this week.
I didn't say it this week. No, I was prepared.
It's ahead of its time.
The Dark Knight, you know, it's a film very much of its time. The Dark Knight.
And
Harry Met Sally is very 90s.
People have given out before about us saying like, you know, you say, count the amount of times to say comments or whatever. No, I'm not saying no, because Brian's one is, it's of its time. It's like that beat that you have.
It's what they call, like, it's a bridging, phrase.
Yeah, I got a lot of crap on YouTube for another interview I did where somebody's like, he said you know 33 times. It was a 78-minute interview. And it was a colloquial.
It's a colloquial.
Somebody counted.
Who has that amount of time that they can count, you know? But no, one point I want to say about the final shootout. It's brilliant.
It's so good.
And here's why I love it, right? Because there is a sense of progression in it. Like, literally, like, you can see the money is in the middle of the courtyard. They've got to get into it. They've got to get to it. And it's about them literally trying to fight their way to it. And, like, you know that scene when they first meet the bodyguards? And it's like, you know, he does a thing like, moving, move, moving, move. Like, that's real, like, tactics for, Navy SEAL guys. Because, like we were saying, Christopher McQuarrie's brother was a Navy SEAL guy or something like that. That's literally what they do. But the final shootout, again, it's that thing, and it's a thing that he did in Fallout as well. There's a sense of geography. There's a sense of like, okay, here's the building.
Kind of the spatial awareness. Yeah,
he shows you the building, and he shows you where the money is. And then the audience then knows, right, okay, when he gets to there, he's looking right at it. When he gets to there, he can't really see it. When he gets to such and such a place, the audience is able to track the action rather than it being chaotic. Like. Mm-hmm. And that's just the mark of a good director. The mark of a good director is that you could literally turn off the dialogue and the sound and you'll still know what's happening just by the visual language that's on display. There's loads of references to Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid as well.
Yeah, I was thinking Butch Cassidy,
because Parker and Lombai was the real names of Butch Cassidy and Sundance. There's also a load of references to Sam Peckinpah, you know, Fort Apache and all that kind of thing. It has a real kind of Western vibe to it. Like, even the way that Benicio del Toro kind of carries himself, like the way he's always like holding his belt, that's a real gunslinger kind of vibe. It's brilliant. It's such a good, but D is absolutely right. I was watching it, I was like, I totally get why this didn't do well. I love it, but I'm like,
just towards the end of Tarantinoism and
people
are kind of, well, it's Tarantino-esque, and that's what
it's actually very,
and that's why it's of
Tarantino.
Its time, and that's why it's of its time. Got it.
Do we call this the of, do we change the name from the Reeves to the of its time segment with Brian Lloyd?
Well,
and another thing,
but
it's so well written as well. Like, you genuinely don't know what's going to come next, and it's so exciting. And like you said, there are so many great moments, such as, you know, that cafe scene and like the final shootout, where you genuinely don't know how it's going to work out.
Yeah.
And it is that kind of, like you said, the Butch Cassidy setup in that, like, it's kind of pointless. Like, what is the point at this point? after everything that's happened, of them going for that money. Like, they know...
They're dumbasses,
They kind of... But they're determined and warped, and it's, like, it's just... It's fascinating to watch. Like, he's such a great writer and director. He should keep doing better.
What do you think he's going to do next, Steve? Because he was like, I'm not going near Star Wars, which I was delighted with.
Yeah.
I was like, fair play. He's like, no thanks.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, he can kind of do whatever the heck he wants. I really hope that Fallout will do really well. I think it deserves to do really well. And I really, really think it's one of those films you have to see on a big screen.
Okay,
it's just not the same. So after this, he can do whatever he wants, and I'll probably check it out because he's great.
Before we go, play Hollywood Studio.
Ooh.
So we mentioned Disney have fired James Gunn. We all collectively disagreed with the firing, but we're not a studio. We're an imaginary studio right now. Chris McQuarrie's looking for his next project. Does he come in and make Guardians of the Galaxy 3?
No.
Oh, no. I don't think that's the right fit at all.
No. God, no.
I mean, he doesn't even really do... I mean, he does great action.
Chris McQuarrie in a box.
No, he does. He is ruler of many genres: action, thriller, crime, loads of stuff. But
you could argue
comedy has become so.
You could argue Guardians of the Galaxy is a crime movie.
It is, but they're about criminals. No, I'll tell you why Chris McQuarrie wouldn't do Disney.
Criminals,
right? I'll tell you why Chris McQuarrie wouldn't do Disney. He would be pulling his hair out by the
end. With studio control.
He would completely book against it. Who would they get to do Volume 3? Tell you exactly who would get to do it. Taika Waititi.
Yeah, that's kind of obvious. Yeah.
That's the most obvious logical choice. Call in Taika Waititi, get him to do the third
volume. Will he do it, though?
That makes a lot of sense, though.
I mean, like, they gave him a fairly...
I bet, for the paycheck he would.
For the paycheck, but not even that. But, like, I mean, for the fact that, like, he did such a good job with Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
And the fact that they gave him a lot of leeway with that.
My only worry would be, are they going to, because of the whole background with James Gunn being fired and everything, are they going to be like totally freaking out and controlling over Guardians 3? Because from what I heard, like, Taika Waititi did a very good job in basically kind of...
hoodwinking them.
Yeah, and tiptoeing around them. And that's how he ended up getting like so much leeway with it and everything.
I think what he would have needed there was, and Chris Pratt has the power to do that now of anybody,
yeah,
is that, you know, Chris Hemsworth being Thor would have been like, no, trust him, he's dead. Like,
yeah,
he
would have been distracting
true,
the studio people or Marvel people or whatever while Taika Waititi was doing whatever he wanted.
Mm.
You know, Chris
and
Pratt
even
could
having
do
Kate
that.
Blanchett, like,
exactly.
There
but you've
well,
got somebody
yeah,
going,
yeah.
No, look, you know, you've got a
he's
big movie
great.
Star going, yeah. Okay, I'm in with his vision. Mm-hmm. I think that'll be the test there.
Mm.
Okay, so that's it for this week. D, we'll miss you for now. Are you gonna wait for 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
Oh, we have to do two shows.
It's gonna be a sausage fest. It's gonna be a sausage fest.
It is gonna be. What's out next week?
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Can we do... When's Equalizer out?
It's not out for ages. It's not out till 17th of August. It's actually out the week I come back, so I'll be able to...
You've seen it.
Yeah.
Great, there you go.
I thought it was crap. Spoiler alert. Okay, that's,
I liked it.
that's it for this week. Please do like and subscribe. Thank you to Charlotte Reed for putting together all the visual aspects of the show. And shout out to producer Dave. Deadpan Dave. Handsome Dave. Sports Dave. Not Dave O'Shocklancy or Dave Bryan. Dave O'Regan.
Shocknessy, by the way. Shocknessy.
Appreciate it, Dave. Appreciate it. We'll see you next week.
Now, come on. A woman needs security like a man needs approval. She wants her past, present, and future to all be secure right now.